And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Raptors Reasonablest podcast. I'm your host, Blake Murphy. I have not left in free agency, at least not yet. Neither has my co-host, Eric Perrine. Eric, what's up, man? You're hanging on to that non-guarantee date like it's life and death, eh?
I mean, if life and death can be melded together with the nap I just took, I think I was out for like 30 minutes. Cool. I was commenting to you, and then I tweeted about it. Like, not that we have difficult jobs in a lot of ways, but just the last 72 hours, just the amount you have to be thinking about all the permutations of everything. I'm feeling it today. I'm a bit tired.
Yeah, to give you some frame of reference, I am staunchly anti-nap, as you might expect. They give me panic attacks. I always feel worse after. I considered one today, and then I ran out of time because I've done, as some people may know, I turn hobbies into work, and I had to prep for some Columbia House Party episodes that I'm recording right after this. So, no nap for me. Not a lot of sleep the last couple days, but it's great. I think everyone knows how much I love the draft and the free agent frenzy and stuff. Compressing that all into 5 days was a little bit much, but the faster I get to update the cap spreadsheet, whew, I'm here for it. It's beautiful now. We've got all these non-guaranteed second years.
Oh, baby. The permutations are permutational.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them.
We've still got Nando DiColo on the books as an RFA, most importantly.
You really can't ask for much more than that,
I don't think. You can't.
If
you're listening to this, welcome. If you're not already a subscriber to the written side of The Athletic, oh boy, have you missed out on a lot of content this week. Luckily, you can catch up. That's not going anywhere. The training camp doesn't start for like 7 minutes, so you have time to catch up. Things you may have missed: the Raptors drafting Malachi Flynn and Jalen Harris. The Raptors being told by the federal government that they cannot play in Canada to start this season, and they'll play in Tampa instead. The Raptors losing Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol and turning around and signing Aaron Baines and DeAndre Mabry and re-signing Chris Boucher. That's a lot. We had you covered for all of that. If you're not a subscriber yet, go to theathletic.com/we the six. That's the number 6. And you can get a subscription for just $1 a month right now. That's back, but only for you, our loyal podcast listeners. So theathletic.com/we the six. Sometimes if you just click one of our articles on web instead of mobile, the flash sale pops up anyway. But that's the hard link. If not, Eric, before we get into the specifics of who's out and who's in free agency, how are you feeling just about everything in general? Everything basketball related in general. Not everything in general. I think you have therapy on your next Zoom call, not this one.
Yeah. I mean, that's obviously where my mind went, and that's why I started laughing. I think it's okay. I think shooting, as we expected, was well compensated this offseason, or better compensated than any other single skill, I believe. I think, what went on with the Raptors, as we'll get into, was certainly jarring, particularly emotionally, even if we were prepared for it potentially coming to pass, but not surprising how the manner and how the Raptors responded to it. And, like, thinking about the Eastern Conference, like, I think Atlanta is the one team that has notably gotten, especially if Bogdan Bogdanovic ends up going there. He signed an offer sheet as a restricted free agent. Like, their talent has certainly gone way through the roof. But other than that, this isn't to say teams won't be better than they were last year, because obviously, especially in Brooklyn, there are injury cases. But other than that, I don't think there's one Eastern Conference team that over the last week or over the last 10 days has gotten like way better to the point where the Raptors can't even sniff them anymore. So I guess that's how I'm feeling. How about you?
Yeah, it's all right. You know, there are some teams that I thought have had really nice weeks when you include the draft. The bulk of those teams are in the Western Conference. So, you know, I think it was you that pointed out that maybe we're headed, especially with the more balanced schedule this year, maybe we're headed for some East teams with some truly awful records.
Just a thought, just a possibility.
I think it's probably real. Yeah. Well, you said it's a possibility. I would say it's maybe even a likelihood.
Yeah. No,
of the East is bad.
Yeah. In my most recent article that just went up minutes before we started recording, at the end, I sort of put the East into tiers as it sits now. And the last four teams are just maybe the four worst teams in the league. And it's gonna be ugly. But I mean, what's new?
You have just no faith in the Detroit Pistons' infinite centers, eh?
It's look. You know how much I love James Edwards at the Athletic Detroit. I'm glad he got a lot to write about, especially on Friday night. I don't envy his task of having to make sense of that in real time.
Yeah, I mean, we were DMing a little bit on Slack, and I was trying to like update a Pistons cap sheet while he was like obviously doing his job and reporting and stuff. And what a mess that was to walk through.
Yeah, and I do get, anyway, we don't, this isn't a Pistons podcast. I don't think they're going to be very good this year now.
Yeah. How do your tiers in the East change with the news that just came down from Shams Charania of The Athletic that Taco Fall is back with the Boston Celtics on a two-way?
Well, I guess Boston will lose one more playoff game than they should. I guess that's the only, because of bad inbound protection.
By the way, in your tiers, I think you have Brooklyn too high and Philly too low.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, reasonable minds can disagree. All right, so in tracking the Raptors' moves, the first one that came down was that Serge Ibaka has left. He's signing with the Los Angeles Clippers for 2 years and $19 million. Marc Gasol soon followed to the Los Angeles Lakers for a two-year minimum deal. Eric, I know that, you know, a lot of the times we separate fandom from, you know, the journalism side of our job, quote unquote journalism, since we cover basketball. you know, Ibaka and Gasol going to the respective LA teams, does that hurt a little bit more if you're the Raptors, or does it make it even more understandable because it's quite obvious why these decisions were made?
Like, can it be both? Like, yeah. It's like kind of annoying that key contributors to the 2019 champion Toronto Raptors continue to sign in Los Angeles, but these are good players, and those are two of the teams with the best chances of winning the 2021 title. So, of course, those teams are hyper-aggressively hunting those players, and of course those players in the back half of their career want to go to teams that have a good chance of winning the championship. You know, it does hammer away at a long-term insecurity about guys not wanting to stay in Toronto that I don't think is, you know, fair, but also three of these guys the Raptors did try to keep. Now, other than Kawhi Leonard, like, they didn't do everything it took to try and keep them, but, like, they had had the highest salary offer for one season, and now they're going to LA, and that furthers a certain glamour city, glamour location, market type conversation that, like, you have to realize has a lot of history in Toronto and many other markets, by the way. So that part is definitely annoying. But saying that, if, you know, Kawhi Leonard signed in Miami or New York, it could be Serge Ibaka going there today instead of LA. So the where I don't think ultimately matters as much as their leaving in general. And just you know, beyond that, slowly watching the team disappear to where you've only got half of that 2019 playoff rotation back, it's a lot to take, especially since, you know, it's very possible the Raptors won't play a game in Toronto this year. Like, I had a really dark thought the other day, which maybe I'll share later in the playoffs, but, like, it's tough to say goodbye to these guys, especially when you don't get to say goodbye to them.
Yeah. So what do we got left? We got Chris Boucher, Kyle Lowry, Patrick McCaw,
Norman Powell,
Fred Van Vliet, and if you want to count OG Anunoby, who didn't play but was obviously a part of the team.
Yes.
Not a lot of that championship team left.
Yeah, and like obviously, as I said, like half the rotation, since it was basically an 8-man rotation in the playoffs, and now 4 of those guys signed in California. Downey Green has since been rerouted to Philadelphia via Oklahoma City. They wanted to bring it back. They tried to bring it back. It didn't end up happening. They pivoted, I feel, in a pretty intelligent way that preserves some long-term goals. But it's disappointing. It's disappointing whenever you can't have a true run-it-back season. They were already robbed of that. So it's just a furthering of that. And I don't think that means this offseason is some great failure. But from an emotional perspective, it's certainly tough to swallow.
Well, here's what I'm going to share with you that's really going to just twist that knife even more. When Malcolm Miller signs a non-guaranteed minimum with the Clippers, take one more of the Raptors' rings.
Yeah. I think that would personally hurt us more than the Raptors fans.
Yes. Former one-time co-host of this podcast.
Yes. Was he a co-host or was I on with?
No, you weren't on.
No. Okay. Anyway, great dude.
Yeah. He was also just on the Dishes and Dimes podcast, and it was really good. So check that podcast out.
I hope he finds a landing spot.
Me too.
Anyway.
Yeah. So Ibaka and Gasol. Ibaka signing 2 years at the mid-level. It was reported that the Raptors offered 1 year 12. I had thought the Raptors might offer a little more than that on a 1 year. Really, especially with the relationship Ibaka and Masai have always had, you know, I could see that conversation having been pretty straightforward of like, this is our plan for the season. This is what things are going to look like. This is what the money in the role might be for you. If you really want to chase a ring and that second year player option and the $19 million total guaranteed is really important to you, you know, we'll understand, but let's not negotiate here. Let's just end amicably. Maybe I'm projecting because I would like that to have been the case rather than, you know, Serge leaving unhappy or something like that. But it makes sense, right? Like the Raptors, even with Ibaka and Gasol back, like, best case scenario is probably something that looks like last season, but they come through against Boston. Now, I'm not writing off, you know, a potential finals run as something not worth chasing. I just mean both of those guys would have been a year older, and this, you know, since the moment Kawhi got acquired, we've been talking about this coming season as a transition year for the Raptors, likely between eras, and all of their moves suggest that they feel similarly. I guess what I'm getting at is, like, do you understand it from Ibaka and Gasol's side? And, I guess what I'm really getting at here is you said that the Raptors, you know, probably didn't do everything they could to keep these guys. But did they do everything that you would have been comfortable with them doing? Had you changed your mind by the end of this that they should have given Ibaka or Gasol an extra year or anything like that?
No. I think they were correct in only offering them 1 year. Now, if 112 was the offer, I myself would have gone higher. And the significance of that number is basically they could have kept most of the mid-level exception intact to chase another key part. And it was actually like a very... I'm not reporting this, but that would be a move to actually increase short-term competitiveness, not decrease it.
Yeah, now my counter to that would be that you technically could have given Ibaka, you know, like there's ways to get there if you really need to. But I think in a transition year, you know, the time for attaching a pick to a salary to get out from under it is probably past. So yeah, you could clear up another $4 million in flexibility by paying someone with cap space a second to take on Stanley Johnson. But one of the prime targets to take on such a player, the Detroit Pistons, first of all, already had Stanley Johnson, and second of all, don't think
reunion.
He's not a center, so what use would the Pistons have for him?
Yeah,
like as you and I have mentioned before, your tax obligation is determined by your salary on the last day of the season, not the start of the season. So you could have wiggled under, but there's also apron implications and stuff like that. They could, basically what I'm saying is they could have found a way to give Ibaka more than 12 and still use the mid-level, but jumping through all these hoops to do that, given what they ended up being able to do at the center position, given what their priorities are this year and next, I think it's understandable.
Yeah, it does suck, though. Yeah, exactly. Like I think they, like I wrote on Sunday, whatever day that was, like they came to a cold decision, as is their jobs. Like, I don't mean that as a negative. Like, they too are thinking about the possibilities of winning a championship and how to keep windows open or keep a future window potentially open. And they're trying to, you know, keep a lot of a few balls in the air at the same time. And like you said, the ceiling of a team that had everybody back from last year, again, like that, they could have made a finals run. You wouldn't have predicted it, but it was on the table. But frankly, it was pushing it, and you had to, more than the money, you owe these guys honesty. And I think, I would believe that they were. Marc Gasol goes for basically the minimum for 2 years to LA, and that's not the first time he's given up money to try and win.
Gave up money to come to Toronto.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was referring to, Blake. So you can't hate it. It can be disappointing. I would have loved to see Mark back. I know a lot of fans were less excited about or less upset about Mark leaving than Serge. I think there are many reasons that we don't need to discuss explain away that. But you can't be mad at them. And I think the Raptors, basically, we could split hairs here, but basically have the right approach in mind by not extending multiple years to either of those guys.
Yeah. So I guess before we transition to who the Raptors got, what I want to ask you, Eric, is Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka, by way of being part of the championship team, by way of just being generally likable human beings in general, hence me saying generally twice, I feel like they are going to, I feel like Gasol especially is going to have kind of this outsized, you know, when Sean Woodley 5 years from now does his annual ranking of all-time Raptors, like Gasol was here for only high leverage moments. No. Ibaka was here a little longer, but he had some defining playoff moments earlier. I think so much of his growth as a personality came in Toronto. Like, I think Ibaka in a short time has put himself pretty high. Like, he only played 228 games as a Raptor over 3.5 years. But I feel like in terms of likability and visibility in the franchise history, he's going to be, you know, if not in the top 10, he's going to be close. Like, both of us drafted him on our all-time Raptors teams when we were doing that roster thing. And obviously that's 30 guys. That's not 10 guys. But I feel like he's going to be up there. So what I want to ask before you move to who's here now is, we'll do Ibaka first. What is going to be your defining memory of Serge Ibaka as a Raptor?
I think game 7 against Philly. I think.
Oh, yeah. The pull up over Ben Simmons?
Not, I mean, that shot, but also, like, the Raptors were kind of shook in that game. Like, their offense was not working. Kawhi, I think, finished with, what, 39 shots in that game? Like, it was not a pretty game, and there was a lot of hesitation from a lot of guys, and Serge wasn't hesitating. So if you want to say a single shot, like, sure, that shot, but I thought just his whole demeanor and the fearlessness with which he played was really important, and it went on to be really important for the rest of that run. And then, like, for that to carry over into, you know, his best shooting year in the NBA is pretty damn impressive at the age, at 31, and the way his game grew. Forget what he did off the court, and obviously, you know, that will be a huge part of his legacy. But the way his game grew, if we think back to 2018, when the famous, culture reset?
Yeah.
Serge was the guy who was coming along slowly with that. He was the guy who couldn't figure out the path. Like, Jonas was doing great, and nobody thought that. But Serge was the guy who couldn't make the next pass. And, like, over the course of the next few years, he really figured it out. And I think, so yeah, the one memory, I think Game 7 against Philly. But overall, just, like, the narrative arc of his both on-court and off-court career are really things that will stick with me.
I've got I'm gonna share two here. They're both, well, one is kind of on the court but not really, and it's when he, like, wrung Marquise Chris by the neck. And
well, that's my favorite story I wrote. Yes, was his all about all his missed punches.
Why can't Ibaka land a punch?
Which I was not. I should say never. I would say he has never yet tried to punch me over that story. So I am eternally thankful to Serge for that.
That's good. I think my other one that'll stick with me is in the 2017-2018 season. So this was kind of like, this was pre How Hungry Are You. Serge still wasn't, like, really there yet as a personality. He was still a little prickly with us. This was before he did Danny Green's podcast talking about how... This is before he did Danny Green's podcast talking about how we make so little money that changes perspective on us. And I was having... The locker room had cleared out, and I was just, like, kind of having a personal conversation with CJ Miles. And Serge, like, came out, and so it was just the three of us in the locker room, and he engaged in that conversation. We were talking about... I had been talking with CJ about, you know, the social media side of things for a player or a player's family. And it was the first time, oh no, the Pelicans signed Wenyen Gabriel, another one of my camp flyers.
Sorry.
It was the first time I'd really like had a personal conversation with Serge and heard him kind of open up in a personal way. And I won't share any of the details of it, but that was kind of, in retrospect, like a glimpse that he was starting to open up with us. And then obviously, you know, a lot of that was self-directed for him. But yes, also what you thought I was going to say, the whole thing about him realizing how little we made and that he should be nicer to us as a result.
That's what they should tell rookies at the rookie symposium about dealing with the medium.
Yeah. That minimum contract you're on, cut that, you know, by 12 or 15. all right, Eric, same question for Marc Gasol.
It's actually a story that one of our colleagues wrote, at The Athletic Milwaukee, who talked to Giannis Antetokounmpo after the Raptors eliminated them in 2019. He talked to Giannis sort of about what he learned, and he talked about, like, dreaming about seeing Kawhi and Gasol smothering him in like traps or in those situations, and like seeing them. He didn't use the word nightmares, I don't think, but that's how it came across. And I think, like, that's it, right? Like, this guy knew how to defend at such a next level, such a different level to what we've seen before from the center position. It wasn't just the one-on-one, you know, slowing down Joel Embiid, although obviously that, you know, zero-point Embiid performance from the beginning of last season stands out, and, you know, every game against Joel Embiid, more or less, over that run stand out. It was just the IQ on that end. The hug with Joel Embiid after Game 7, and then being one of a few reporters to talk to him about it before the Milwaukee series started, that was, you know, I think that got showed a lot who Mark was as, like, a person, as, you know, as a player, as, you know, he really thinks about the world in a broader context. He really shows empathy in a lot of ways, and he's just one of the more sort of wise, one of the wiser raptors I can remember. But and again, that's on the court, but even more so on off the court, I would say.
I'm going to take your defensive one about the traps and flip it to the offensive side. And I forget which game this was. It was in the relaunch. And there was a play where Gasol, as he did so often this year, just like passed up the widest open of wide open threes. And I was like, I don't get demonstrative when I'm watching games, but I was like, hands on my head, like, why? And then the play developed to where I forget who it was. I want to say it was Van Vliet, but an even better three-point shooter ended up with like an even better look at a three. And it was just like that doesn't excuse Gasol not shooting a lot of the time, but it was such a good snapshot of like Marc Gasol is smarter than everyone else at basketball. Just don't doubt what he's doing and what he's seeing. And like that's an extreme example, but that was like that happened two or three times a game where Gasol did something and you were like, "Well, I didn't even see that as a possibility." You know, as I was watching it unfold. So,
yeah, just such a next level thinker of the game.
Yeah.
And I know fans are frustrated, not all fans, a lot of fans were frustrated by him, as the season wound down and as last season started. He really did struggle offensively in many ways. But, you know, I'd say he's more likely than not to end up in the Hall of Fame, especially because of his double championship year. And just, again, such a great thinker of the game. It was watching him and Kyle Lowry on the same team spoiled both of us in terms of like basketball IQ and getting to appreciate that every night.
Sure did. All right, let's transition to who is inbound then, because if Ibaka and Gasol are out, the Raptors have a need in the front court. They started to address that need first by signing Aron Baynes, then re-signed it. Well, I don't know if they actually did it in this order, but this is the order it was reported in. They signed Aron Baynes, they re-signed Chris Boucher, they then signed Alex Len and DeAndre Bembry. Baynes, Boucher, and Bembry all have one-year deals with second-year non-guaranteed, which not only gives the Raptors an out for 2021 flexibility, it also makes them potential trade assets in this kind of window of time next year, where we saw guys like Trevor Ariza and Darius Miller get their deals guaranteed for the purposes of making a trade possible. So they're, you know, it's basically the second years are no downside. And in the case of Baynes and Boucher, the Raptors did pay a little bit more on year one for that right from the looks of the contracts. Alex Len is a straight one-year deal at about $2 million and change. So we can, Baynes is the big one to talk about because he figures to, at least the way it looks right now, probably factor in as the starter. Baynes is a guy who has turned himself into a semi-decent three-point threat on reasonable volume over the last couple of years. He is, as far as replacing Marc Gasol's screen setting goes, probably the closest thing you could have gotten. He draws charges at a Gasol slash Lowry rate. And then the big thing that he does that I think will obviously help the Raptors is every season of his career except for one, he has had at least a 75th percentile impact on defensive rebounding for a big. So I mea culpa here. In my write-up, I called Baynes an above-average rebounder, which probably undersells it. As someone in the comments pointed out, by five-year RAPM, he has the highest defensive rebounding impact. Cleaning the glasses stats aren't quite that rosy, but he's been between 75th and 96th percentile driving defensive rebounding in all but 1 year of his career. And when I say driving defensive rebounding, what I mean is that it's not necessarily him that's grabbing the rebounds, but because he's a good box out guy, because he does grab his share of rebounds, the team tends to rebound very, very well with him on the floor. And I will just say to add to that, while he is not, you know, you're the similar to Gasol not being a traditional rim protector, Aron Baynes has had a pronounced impact in five of the last 6 years on opponent shot frequency at the rim. So he is in the deterrent class of rim protector where he might not block a ton when it gets there, but you have trouble getting there against Aaron Baines, and that spreads across four different teams over the last 6 years. So this is not a system-oriented thing. He had success with that in San Antonio, Detroit, Boston, and Phoenix, and probably will in Toronto. Aaron Baines, as far as a plan C for your center position on the free agent market, not bad, Eric.
Yeah, I think he replicates some of the things that both players do. Obviously not the at-the-rim rim protector that Ibaka is in his best moments. He's just not as brilliant as Gasol is, and that means not always being in the right place instead of being in the right place, you know, 8.5 or 9 times out of 10 as opposed to perfect. But I think in terms of, you know, spending that available money, it was a wise expenditure. I would say my concern is that it's not only about Baines, it's about everybody, is they don't really have a guy who has logged those starting center minutes consistently mm-hmm. over the course of his career. Now, I think the Raptors are going to play small more often than not, so that's not necessarily something that's going to kill them or anything like that, but none of these guys, with exception, I think Alex Lynn had one 1,800-minute season, but none of these guys have logged those heavy minutes and done it all year. Obviously.
I mean, Len had 5 seasons of 1,300 or more, which is like, you know, Len's played a role.
Yeah.
That was a couple years ago now.
Yeah, yeah. If he's doing that, something will have gone wrong probably for the Raptors. But that's why they've brought him in. He's a good mm-hmm. insurance policy and has a bit more upside. But to stick to Baines, like his shooting, I do remember that game you wrote about in your piece on Sunday when
he had never hit a three before.
Yeah, he just started to hit. I think I was there. It was in Boston, right?
I think so.
Yeah, I think I was at that game and he just started to pop. I think they were corner threes.
Well, he hit 3 mid-range jumpers like Serge Ibaka pick and pop. Elbow jays.
Yeah.
And then I
vaguely remember having the conversation on Media Row and looking how many threes he had hit before that game, and it was not very many. And since then, like, he went like about 35% on 6.5 per attempts per 36 minutes last year. So that's more threes than either Ibaka or Gasol took, in case you're worried about that. Which is a big part, because we heard how often Nick Nurse said that just the threat of a guy shooting and of all of the players on his team shooting or on the floor at the same time shooting is a very real thing in terms of getting a defense to, fold a little bit or collapse a little bit or put it on edge. So I think he's like you said, I don't care what the first year price is. There's no opportunity cost here as far as I'm concerned, or almost no opportunity cost. That money couldn't have been spent in a more effective way, or in a notably more effective way, I should say. So who cares what you're paying him in the first season? Like, that's not a thing. Yeah, maybe you're going to come up with some cap mechanic, you know, way now about why it is important, but it's also important for potential trades. Like, putting together, if something presents itself, the fact that Chris Boucher and Aaron Baines are making a bit more scratch than they might otherwise on without having a second guaranteed year, that's going to matter too. So I like the Baines signing. And my final thought is I really remember him giving Jonas Valanciunas a hard time. So he will give similar centers a hard time when that is his job.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Yeah. So within that, I will say, no, there's not really a good cap reason to not have given Baines that money. What I will say is I figured Alex Len would be a minimum contract. Grange said he was getting the last of the mid-level exception. The difference there is really small in financial terms. But say they wanted to, say Paul Watson kills it this year and they want to convert him and sign him to a multi-year minimum contract, or Jalen Harris kills it and they want to do that with him. Well, you can only go 2 years on those contracts unless you have a sliver of your exception left. You can go to 3 or 4 if you have that slice of mid-level exception. So you're talking about the difference between Fred VanVleet being a free agent after 2 years and DeJuan Hernandez and Matt Thomas being free agents after 3. If you're talking about team control and all those anti-labor terms, you would want those guys on multi-year. You would want them on cheap deals. You want to go as far as the Hinkie special if you can, the 4-year non-guaranteed minimums. But you would like that little bit of extra flexibility.
That was Robert Covington's first deal, right? Am I making that up?
I believe so. Yeah, it was the one KJ McDaniels turned down and then got 3 years, $10 million from the Rockets instead.
Yeah.
By the way, Alex Len, so let's talk about Len, because we're looking at Len and Baines in kind of the same breath here, because they are filling the same role. You talk about how Nick Nurse likes everyone on the court to be able to shoot. Len has shown that over a much, much smaller sample. Alex Len takes most of his shots at the rim. Alex Len's season was weird because he was like, by advanced metrics, like just friggin' awesome with the Kings last year in 200 minutes. Bigger sample, he's been like a slight positive player driving team performance on bad teams, which is, you know, better than hurting team performance on bad teams, but it's hard to pull much out of there. The things that he does do, though, again, this is another guy who is going to help the team on the glass at least a little bit. He doesn't foul a ton for his type of big man play, which is a little surprising because I thought I was expecting for sure for him to be a high foul guy. And then, like Baines, elite rim deterrence numbers over his last couple seasons. He also has had good, actually just straight up rim protection numbers. So don't sleep on Alex Len as a rim protecting center, because no, he's not, you know, he's not Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka maybe, but he has had really strong impacts on how his teams the last couple years are able to keep the rim off limits for opponents, which is a really important part of the Raptors' strategy. They sell out to protect the rim, and we've talked a ton about how that results in corner threes and stuff like that, but the rim is their priority, and Len and Baines both fit that.
Yeah, he's a pure drop-back guy in terms of defensive coverage, and so that will limit them in certain ways. Of course, the Raptors have some of the best perimeter defense in the league, so not such a big deal necessarily. Or you could certainly afford it with a guy like Len. Oh man, not Len. Jeremy Lin is still unsigned. So I thought, as I tweeted and I put it in my story, like when I was thinking about them potentially using their final spot as it stands now, that could change with Terrence Davis and DeJuan Hernandez both still their guarantee date or. Is it their guarantee date, or does it all become guaranteed on Sunday? Yes,
for those two. That's not uniform across every contract, okay. But in the case of those two, it is effectively, it's not this because there are cap reasons not, but for the purposes of a fan listening, it is basically a team option on the weekend.
Yeah, so if they can cut them before Sunday with no penalty, and that would allow them to open up another roster spot if that's what they want to do. But as I was writing about them filling that, for now, the final roster spot, he was the guy who I liked most. And that he was available at that price is good. It's positive that he has helped bad teams. He's only really been on bad teams, I believe. Atlanta, Phoenix, Sacramento. Those teams haven't been good in a while, so it's safe to bet he's only been on bad teams. Maybe one of the Suns teams he was on was semi-frisky, but Yeah, like as you said, as a third center, fifth big type, he's perfectly cromulent. And I don't mean like I think he's actually an actively good signing. And
I tweeted out that like, hey, if Len is your the way I framed it was 3C/5th big, and that was strictly because, you know, some people still like to consider Boucher a center, or you could certainly see the Raptors closing some games with OG as the center. But yeah, like Lennon Baines is not a terrible center rotation. I would say neither of them is probably the quality level of like unquestioned starter, but they're both like quality backups. And if you have two quality backups and you have the ability to play small and you have a change of pace guy in Chris Boucher, you're probably in okay shape. Not Ibaka Gasol Boucher shape from the last 2 years, but not terrible. Boucher, by the way, got re-upped, which is on the personal side great to see. A guy who came to basketball late, dealt with underhousing as a teen in Quebec, found his way to Oregon, then tore his ACL in his draft year. This will be his fourth pro season. He's about to turn 28, and he'll now he now finally gets that payday on a 1 year deal with a non-guaranteed second year. Great to see it from the personal side. This is a guy who 2 years ago told me before the season that he was going to win G League Defensive Player of the Year and MVP both, and said it like it was the most obvious eventuality in the world, and then he did it. So that lets you know the confidence at play. He reined in his usage rate last year, which was always going to be a question mark. You know, it's a question mark with a lot of the top G League guys, is can you adjust your role to the NBA? Boucher scaled back his usage rate. His block rate came down as he played more minutes, but he was still in the 92nd percentile among big men per cleaning the glass. Great, great, great offensive rebounder, energy guy in the open court. And, you know, I actually think you look at the roster and you look what some of these second units might look like with either Boucher playing center in a Lowry and bench unit, or Boucher playing the four alongside a Len or a Baines. Maybe we are okay with Chris Boucher letting that usage tick back up. Like maybe let it fly, Swatterboy.
I think they're going to let him at least for a little bit. Obviously you want him making the right decisions, and
he's not a good shooter,
but who knows? Like that, I also bet like one of the things they told him is if you're back, like since you're so willing to shoot, you better become a better shooter. So that's something they've worked on with guys before and it's improved. So
yeah, it's weirdly like it's something that and this was more in his dominant G League season. I would get people asking me and like talking about Boucher as a stretch five, and he shot 29.9% over his pretty good sample in the G League. Not a huge sample, but bigger than the one he's had in the NBA. And in the NBA, he shot 32.1%. And he's never shot better than 32% at any level. So this idea that he's a stretch five or even a stretch four isn't there. But if you know, the fact that you will take them is important. And then we know what he can do defensively, the way he flies around and can impact shots outside the three-point line and at the rim. So you do have kind of this, like, stretch-ish and rim protect-ish guy who's kind of positionless. I don't know. Boucher's fun. Everyone knows Boucher's fun at this point. I think seeing him climb from 12 or 13 minutes to 18 or 19 minutes is going to be a lot of fun. And like with Baines and Len and Bembry, you know, it's hard. This is effectively a one-year deal with a cap wrinkle on the back end. And it's really hard to re-sign one of your own guys to a bad deal.
Yeah. I'm just happy for the guy. And
for sure.
I think, look, on the whole, we talked about the, if this did happen, and I didn't think it would, I thought one of Gasol or Ibaka would take that semi-inflated one-year price. But we talked about how it was a recoverable thing for a year. And I think we'll see how they do. I've had a few people say they've really lost it at the center position. It's going to hurt them badly. And I'm not ruling that out. But I think this is a type of situation we envisioned when we said, you know what, if there's one position where you have to be unsure about as you try to stay competitive, it'd be one thing if they didn't care about how good they were, but they do care about how good they are. This is the position which you figure out on the fly in the short term. And I think they did a decent job.
For sure. And I want to see a little bit of, like I'm not, you know, this has been one of the things that you and I haven't aligned on over the last couple of years, is I like big lineups. I like trying two center lineups or a little more traditional size. And you know, I'm just as excited to see OG and Pascal playing 2-3 last year as 4-5. But I do want to see, and I think it's worthwhile to see, you know, they didn't invest in a center solution here, right? Long term. So I do think, as much as it's absolutely going to be worth, you know, seeing what Boucher can do in a bigger role for sure, seeing if DeJuan Hernandez can give you anything. You know, I don't think you're evaluating Baines for future years because he's my age and, you know, he's probably in his decline phase. But there's also utility in seeing what's there with, you know, OG at center a little bit more. If you don't want to classify OG as the center, you know, you go OG Pascal with a third wing or third forward on the floor, whatever those lineups look like, you know, see how much utility is there over a larger sample. One more name to talk about before we go here, Eric. The Raptors also added DeAndre Bembry, a 26-year-old wing, good passer for the wing, very willing passer and very low usage guy in recent years, which is right up my alley. Not a shooter. He's kind of McCaw-ish, like McCaw with a little bit more size. What do you think of Bembry and his fit? I've always really liked Bembry. I like passing wings who don't and can't shoot. Everyone knows this about me at this point. But I think, you know, my first thought was that he's a similar statistical profile to McCaw, a little bigger and probably, you know, a better playmaker and stuff. The big thing is that Bembry, because of his size, and I think he's a better, just a better defender in general. You know, McCaw, a lot of the time when we talk about the defense he provides, we or Nick Nurse have added caveats around, like, it doesn't show up in the stats. Well, Bembry's do. He's always had an elite block rate for his position. He's had an elite steal rate for his position. He's a very good rebounder for his position. So when you're looking at, you know, this type of, okay, well, he's basically a 3-and-D without the three. It's not, and he plays with a little bit of chaos. It's not, like, imagine somewhere between McCaw and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, but better than those guys by a little bit.
I mean, I don't know if he's bad. I don't know if he's better than Rondae. But
I feel like the extra playmaking he provides makes him easier to work into the offense.
Yes, that might be true. I don't know that his overall utility is greater than.
Yeah,
than
like
Rondae,
I don't think
maybe.
He can guard centers like Rondae can, but I do think he can guard a couple positions. And like when you're checking off elite for the position, steal block, offensive and defensive rebound rates, like. There's something there over multiple
years. Yeah, the one thing I'll say is, like, maybe I would have preferred them to swing a little offense-heavy versus defense-heavy with this type of signing. And I really don't have any guys in mind. And in general, you pay more for offense than you pay for defense. Yeah. So
I also think this is maybe, like, we could frame this as this is a... It's not even offense or defense. Like, they wanted a high IQ guy. Like, I think there's at least a little concern about Gasol leaving and some of the IQ that leaves with that and Ibaka leaving and some of the kind of institutional knowledge that leaves with that. And you add another smart guy that makes the plug and play a little easier.
Yeah. And like
maybe that's some of the thinking there too.
You look at the wing, like it's OG, Norm, and then a bunch of question marks. Basically, I mean, if you count Pascal, then Pascal's there, but there's like a lot of uncertainty about, you know, what Matt Thomas can do over the course of a year, if he's given a bigger role, if Terrence Davis will even be here. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that this guy's going to be playing pretty significant minutes for them. So that's definitely a factor. You know, on balance, I like the signing, but, you know, for a team last year that the questions were mostly on offense, I can see that still being the case.
I mean, we talked about in our last episode, like, why it was so important for them to prioritize that through the draft, right? I think that whatever they say publicly, you know, Malachi Flynn and Jalen Harris are both guys who, if they hit and if they develop, are guys who can help some of that half-court shot creation. And obviously they have not addressed that with these signings. You know, Baines is a great screen setter who could shoot a little bit. Len can be a rim runner. Bembry's a decent passer. Boucher is Boucher. They haven't directly addressed that, but I mean, they kept everything clean for 2021. I have to go. That is a big talking point for whenever we next reconvene is, and I think we're probably going to do a written version of Raptors Reasonableist talking about that in the coming days, is, you know, the Raptors very clearly operated like a team with eyes on 2021 here. And some of that is, once Ibaka and Gasol left, there just weren't a lot of guys you'd want to give multiple years to, you know, unless you're me and would have given multiple years to Chris Dunn, Harry Giles, and Dwayne Bacon to fill out the roster. And then everyone would have been really mad. If you think people were mad about Baines, Bembry, Len, and Boucher on one-year deals, whew. Anyway, we'll address that, and believe it or not, training camp starts next week, so we're going to have to tee that up too. We will talk to you again soon. As a reminder, theathletic.com/we the six, that's the number six. If you're not already subscribed, you can get a subscription for $1 a month there, or $1 a week there. Eric, thank you so much, man.
Thanks, Blake. See ya!
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.